Welcome to the Business Forward podcast. Our guest today is flying to Egypt to present a workshop at the AEC School of Business. And we decided to take the chance to talk to her about her extensive experience in leadership development. Maggie Kolkina has over 25 years of expertise in providing leadership development experiences. She's also the founder of Third Thought Consulting, that helps leaders become better leaders and develop their skills. She's worked with major companies like Dell, Pepsi, and Nike. She's also the author of the book Today for Tomorrow, A Field Guide to Scenario Planning. Maggie has an interesting approach to leadership skills development, and I think we should get started. Welcome to the Business Forward podcast, Maggie, and to Egypt. I'm very intrigued. What does Third Thought do exactly? And how does it help leaders? How do you help leaders become better?
So Third Thought Consulting, I started working in the area of creativity. My first career was in the performing arts. I was a choreographer and performer. And when I needed to choose my topic for my graduate thesis, I focused on collaborative creativity, which I thought was a nice connection to take, you know, having come from this very creative and collaborative industry, to look at how people collaboratively work together to innovate inside corporations. And the name Third Thought, first of all, I like the alliteration, Third Thought, but it also connotes going beyond the obvious. So we say, you know, well, on second thought, how about this? And Third Thought is really about going beyond the obvious, going beyond the first good idea and really stretching your thinking, opening yourself to new ideas.
Okay, Maggie, when I Googled your name, you know what came up a lot? The term scenario planning. And you even have a whole book written about it. Can you please explain to us what that is and how it's different from traditional planning? And also how it goes into the work of developing leaders.
So I worked early in my career, after graduate school, I worked for Intel Labs, and it was a very creative place. I really focused my consulting work on supporting innovation. So I was very happy at the Intel Labs, and I had the opportunity to facilitate scenario planning. And scenario planning means using stories, and the process is a structured way to look at the futures that are possible. Most traditional planning is not equipped to really handle the long-term possibilities, and so scenario planning is a process where we use the data from today, the trends, the weak signals, to identify possible ways that these trends and how and innovations may impact the world in the future. But we also look beyond just trends. We are looking at demographics, we're looking at geopolitics, and we factor all those variables into the stories that help us stretch our brain, really, and imagine what it's like to live in those futures. One by one, we can spend time in those futures and then ask, what impact would this have on my business? And so we're not imagining science fiction. We're really basing it on research and data from today. Mm-hmm. And the example I like to use is the COVID pandemic. You know, I ask audiences often, how prepared were you for the global pandemic? And usually not very many hands go up that say, oh yeah, we were prepared. Now that information was knowable. Bill Gates did a TED Talk about it. Many organizations had that on their radar, but not the majority by far. And so that was a real wake-up call for me. I thought, boy, more people need to know about scenario planning. It's normally been done for organizations by specialty firms, but now more and more organizations are building out their own foresight. We call it foresight planning, their own foresight organizations, and large corporations. And more and more leaders are being introduced to scenario planning. It's so powerful.
You just mentioned the COVID-19 pandemic as an example. How can scenario planning come into play in a case like that?
I think that, you know, let's take the case of the pandemic again. It hit smaller businesses, small and medium businesses, much harder than the large corporations. You know, they have fewer cash reserves. And honestly, they're busy running their business. And scenario planning, while interesting, may not be their priority. So it's not about that so much, you know, good or bad. It's just what do we put our time to? And this process, I mean, it's structured. The book is a step-by-step description of how to do it. There are lots of resources out there. And it's really about working with a team, you know, a team of fellow leaders or a leader in their team to explore it a little bit. Will they do as well as the boutique firms that do fantastic jobs with futurists? Maybe not, but they'll inform themselves a little bit better than not looking at it at all.
Well, what makes a good leader, in your opinion, Maggie?
So I think all leaders are trying hard, all leaders are doing their best, but the best leaders are doing a few things. One is they're doing continuous learning. They're always working on themselves. We do a lot of coaching and, you know, personality assessments and 360 degree feedback instruments, and people get feedback. You know, you need feedback and you continuously improve your skills. So that's the first one that I see in leaders. The second is that the best leaders really develop and trust their teams. I think when leaders don't trust their employees, they're watching over their shoulder, they're micromanaging, they're not treating their leader, their team with respect. That does very deep damage. And when people leave companies, they don't really leave companies, they leave a leader that they can't work for anymore. So being a really good leader of people is an important skill. And then the other is being sort of myopic, like I know what my company does, I know everything about it, I know my industry, I know my function, and the better I get at it, the better I am, and suddenly you get disrupted, right? So we can become very myopic, looking only at our organization, and we can be somewhat biased toward new ideas if we think we are the expert. So again, this is kind of related to continuous learning, but the best leaders are open to information that doesn't quite fit their current view of the world.
Okay, let's talk about mental health a little bit and burnout. A lot of employees are burned out these days, and employers are aware. Some of them do something about it, some don't. This is a very stressful time for everybody, and there's a lot to take care of and think about, and work adds to that stress, of course. What is the role of employers in helping their employees keep their mental health in check?
I think that the best organizations are taking a very hard look at this, and they've already taken action. Some organizations are going to a 4-day work week, which has been the research in the projects, and there's been one in Australia. A lot of smaller startups have been doing it successfully for a long time, a big study in the UK. So I think that the most progressive organizations are taking big, big changes like a 4-day work week. And they're also providing resources for the employees in the form of, you know, mental health support, in the form of support for childcare, for exercise, for benefits like that. And again, you know, for smaller companies, that's harder to do, but people can't work at peak 50 hours a week and stay healthy. It's just not possible. So I think that every individual has a responsibility to really look at how they're doing. And, you know, organizations are providing wellness kind of resources. So, you know, are you taking good care of your body, mind, and spirit? And if not, like, here are some suggestions for how you might do that, which is funny you should ask. I started my corporate career as a wellness coordinator. So it's important. It's important. And we've learned so much through the COVID pandemic years that, you know, people also need connection. I think organizations ultimately thrive when they can create a sense of belonging for their employees.
In your expert opinion, what is the biggest mistake that leaders make, one that is unforgivable?
The first thing that came to my mind was disrespect. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes there are people who maybe haven't worked on themselves very much. They have not been doing continuous development. And if they're not taking care of themselves, you know, a single outburst can cause a lot of damage, I think. When you disrespect or humiliate a colleague or an employee, you know, a team member, I think that's a very hard thing to come back from.
Mm. And so you usually can't take it back.
And people, I think that it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, the damage is so deep that, you know, people will run away. That person will not be able to hire a good team. It just won't happen.
Your work involves helping employers become better leaders and deal with tricky situations better. And a lot of employers are now faced with the decisions, difficult decisions they have to make, like lay off a large number of employees or bring back to the office their employees, even if they don't want to come back. What advice do you have for leaders to handle these situations better, to make them as smooth as possible on everyone?
I feel like for instance, right now in the United States, a lot of tech companies are doing some pretty major layoffs. And those aren't really coming from individual leaders. They're coming more from the center of the company, from the finance and HR kind of functions with the senior leadership team. And I don't think those are decisions that companies take lightly. I think that the stigma of layoffs has long passed. I think that people understand that layoffs happen and people lose their jobs. The best companies have a very humane process to do this. I know Intel had a good process when they had to do cutbacks for one reason or another. And again, I don't think those are taken lightly. They had what they called a pool, and you could, you know, you had, I think, 3 months to find another job within the company. They also provided outsourcing. And I think the best companies, you know, do that. So for individual leaders, I think it's anguish. I mean, we've all gotten used to layoffs, but I think it's never gotten easy. And on the front line, it seems like a really horrible thing for a company to do. And they may not understand what's going on behind the scenes. I don't know.
And what would you say to employees getting laid off at this very difficult time?
And I remember I did get laid off once early in my career, and it was awful. And I had a wonderful mentor at the time, and I said, I am not ever going to, I'm going to go find a job where I have like security. And he said, Maggie, there's no security. He said, the security is your own ability. So, you know, making sure that your skills are sharp and that you're very employable is a defense to make sure that you can find another job after you've left one.
Thank you so much for joining us, Maggie. It was a pleasure talking to you.